Shukadev Goswami said, Lord Krishna, who is himself powerful time, desired to destroy the false pride of Lord Indra. When Nanda and the other senior men of Vrindavan heard Sri Krishna's statement, they accepted his words as proper. The cowherd community then did all that Madhusudana had suggested. They arranged for the Brahmins to recite the auspicious Vedic mantras, and using the paraphernalia that had been intended for Indra's sacrifice, they presented offerings to Govardhan Hill and the Brahmins with reverential respect. They also gave grass to the cows. Then, placing the cows, bulls, and calves in front of them, they circumambulated Govardhan. As the beautifully ornamented cowherd ladies followed along, riding on wagons drawn by oxen, they sang the glories of Lord Krishna, and their songs mingled with the Brahmins' chanting of benedictions. Krishna then assumed an unprecedented huge form to instill faith in the cowherd men. Declaring, I am Govardhan Mountain, he ate the abundant offerings. Together with the people of Braja, the Lord bowed down to this form of Govardhan Hill, thus, in effect, offering obeisances to himself. Then he said, Just see how this hill has appeared in person and bestowed mercy upon us. This Govardhan Hill, assuming any form he wishes, will kill any residents of the forest who neglect him. Therefore, let us pay our obeisances to him for the safety of ourselves and our cows. The members of the cowherd community, having thus been inspired by Lord Krishna to properly execute the sacrifice to Govardhan Hill, the cows, and the Brahmins, returned with him to their village of Braja. Chapter 25, Lord Krishna Lifts Govardhan Hill. Shukadev Goswami said, My dear King Parikshit, when Indra understood that his sacrifice had been put aside, he became furious with Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men who were accepting Krishna as their lord. Angry Indra sent forth the clouds of universal destruction, known as Samvartaka. Imagining himself the supreme controller, he spoke as follows. Just see how these cowherd men living in the forest have become so greatly intoxicated by their prosperity. They have surrendered to an ordinary human being, Krishna, and thus they have offended the gods. Their taking shelter of Krishna is just like the foolish attempt of men who abandon transcendental knowledge of the self and instead try to cross over the great ocean of material existence in the false boats of fruitive ritual sacrifices. These cowherd men have acted inimically toward me by taking shelter of this ordinary human being, Krishna, who thinks himself very wise, but who is simply a foolish, arrogant, over-talkative child. To the clouds of destruction, King Indra said, The prosperity of these people has made them mad with pride, and their arrogance is backed up by Krishna. Now go and remove their pride and bring their animals to destruction. I will follow you to Braja, riding on my elephant Airavata and taking with me the swift and powerful wind gods to decimate the coward village of Nanda Maharaj. Shukadev Goswami said, On Indra's order, the clouds of universal destruction, released untimely from their bonds, went to the cowherd pastures of Nanda Maharaj. There they began to torment the inhabitants by powerfully pouring down torrents of rain upon them. Propelled by the fearsome wind gods, the clouds blazed with lightning bolts and roared with thunder as they hurled down hailstones. As the clouds released torrents of rain as thick as massive columns, the earth was submerged in the flood, and high ground could no longer be distinguished from low. The cows and other animals, shivering from the excessive rain and wind, and the cowherd men and ladies, pained by the cold, all approached Lord Govinda for shelter. Trembling from the distress brought about by the severe rainfall, and trying to cover their heads and calves with their own bodies, the cows approached the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The cowherd men and women addressed the Lord, Krishna, Krishna, O most fortunate one, please deliver the cows from the wrath of Indra. O Lord, you are so affectionate to your devotees. Please save us also. Seeing the inhabitants of his Gokula rendered practically unconscious by the onslaught of hail and blasting wind, the Supreme Lord Hari understood that this was the work of angry Indra. Sri Krishna thought, Because we have stopped his sacrifice, Indra has caused this unusually fierce, unseasonal rain, together with terrible winds and hail. By my mystic power, I will completely counteract this disturbance caused by Indra. Demigods like Indra are proud of their opulence, and out of foolishness they falsely consider themselves the Lord of the universe. I will now destroy such ignorance. Since the demigods are endowed with the mote of goodness, the false pride of considering oneself the Lord should certainly not affect them. When I break the false prestige of those bereft of goodness, my purpose is to bring them relief. I must therefore protect the coward community by my transcendental potency, for I am their shelter, I am their master, and indeed they are my own family. After all, I have taken a vow to protect my devotees. Having said this, Lord Krishna, who is Vishnu himself, picked up Govardhan Hill with one hand and held it aloft just as easily as a child holds up a mushroom. The Lord then addressed the cowherd community. O mother, O father, O residents of Braja, if you wish, you may now come under this hill with your cows. You should have no fear that this mountain will fall from my hand. And don't be afraid of the wind and rain, for your deliverance from these afflictions has already been arranged. Their minds thus pacified by Lord Krishna, they all entered beneath the hill, where they found ample room for themselves and all their cows, wagons, servants, and priests, and for all other members of the community as well. Lord Krishna, forgetting hunger and thirst, and putting aside all considerations of personal pleasure, stood there holding up the hill for 7 days as the people of Braja gazed upon him. When Indra observed this exhibition of Lord Krishna's mystic power, he became most astonished. Pulled down from his platform of false pride and his intentions thwarted, he ordered his clouds to desist. Seeing that the fierce wind and rain had now ceased, the sky had become clear of rain clouds, and the sun had risen, Lord Krishna, the lifter of Govardhan Hill, spoke to the cowherd community as follows. My dear cowherd men, please go out with your wives, children, and possessions. Give up your fear. The wind and rain have stopped, and the river's high waters have subsided. After collecting their respective cows and loading their paraphernalia into their wagons, cowherd men went out. The women, children, and elderly persons gradually followed them. While all living creatures looked on, the Supreme Personality of Godhead put down the hill in its original place, just as it had stood before. All the residents of Vrindavan were overwhelmed with ecstatic love, and they came forward and greeted Sri Krishna according to their individual relationships with him, some embracing him, others bowing down to him, and so forth. The cowherd women presented water mixed with yogurt and unbroken barley corns as a token of honor, and they showered auspicious benedictions upon him. Mother Yashoda, Mother Rohini, Nanda Maharaj, and Balaram, the greatest of the strong, all embraced Krishna. Overwhelmed with affection, they offered him their blessings. In the heavens, all the demigods, including the Siddhas, Satyas, Gandharvas, and Charanas, sang the praises of Lord Krishna and showered down flowers in great satisfaction. My dear King Parikshit, the demigods in heaven resoundingly play their conch shells and kettle drums, and the best of the Gandharvas, led by Tumburu, began to sing. Surrounded by his loving cowherd boyfriends and Lord Balaram, Krishna then went off to the place where he had been tending his cows. The cowherd girls returned to their homes, singing joyfully about the lifting of Govardhan Hill and other glorious activities of Lord Krishna, who had so deeply touched their hearts. Srila Rupa Goswami prays, Shamotunga bojagale vinahita krishne navrishti chita dauta dauta barishita lakunati mukhagari ghorita Shunashta padakalpita sivipala chatrasya lakshmim badam vimbran gado ratnani matamahadandasya vimrajati. With his dark bluish raised arm, Krishna held Govardhan Hill aloft. Being full of palm trees, kunati flowers, and various minerals, and having been washed by the great rains, the hill became yellow. It appeared very opulent, like a great golden umbrella furnished with a large sapphire handle, and it shone magnificently. Chapter 26, Wonderful Krishna. Shukadeva Goswami said, the cowherd men were astonished when they saw Krishna's activities, such as lifting Govardhan Hill. Unable to understand his transcendental potency, they approached Nanda Maharaj and spoke as follows. Since this boy performs such extraordinary activities, how could he warrant a birth among worldly men like ourselves, a birth that for him would seem to be contemptible? How could this 7-year-old boy playfully hold up the great hill Govardhan with one hand, just as a mighty elephant holds up a lotus flower? As a mere infant who had hardly yet opened his eyes, he drank the breast milk of the powerful demoness Putana, and then sucked out her very life air as well, just as the force of time sucks out the youth of one's body. Once, when only 3 months old, little Krishna was crying and kicking up his feet as he lay beneath a huge cart. Then the cart fell and turned upside down simply because it was struck by the tip of his toe. At the age of one, while sitting peacefully, he was taken up into the sky by the demon Chunavarta. But baby Krishna grabbed the demon's neck, causing him great pain, and thus killed him. Once, his mother tied him with ropes to a mortar because she had caught him stealing butter. Then, crawling on his hands, he dragged the mortar between a pair of Arjun trees and pulled them down. Another time, when Krishna was tending the calves in the forest together with Balaram and the cowherd boys, the demon Bakasura came with the intention of killing Krishna. But Krishna seized this inimical demon by the mouth and tore him apart. Desiring to kill Krishna, the demon Vatsa disguised himself as a calf and entered among Krishna's calves. But Krishna killed the demon and, using his body, enjoyed the sport of knocking kapita fruits down from the trees. Together with Lord Balaram, Krishna killed the jackass demon and all his friends, thereby securing the safety of the Talavan forest, which abounded with fully ripened palm fruits. After arranging for the mighty Lord Balaram to kill the terrible demon Pralamba, Krishna freed Braj's cowherd boys and their animals from a forest fire. Krishna chastised the most poisonous serpent, Kaliya, and after humbling him, he drove him forcibly from the lake of the Yamuna. In this way, the Lord made the water of that river free of the snake's powerful poison. Dear Nanda, how is it that we and all the other residents of Braj cannot give up our constant affection for your son? And how is it that he is so spontaneously attracted to us? On the one hand, this boy is only 7 years old, and on the other, we see that he has lifted the great hill Govardhan. Therefore, O King of Braja, a doubt about your son arises within us. Nanda Maharaj replied, O cowherd men, just hear my words and let all your doubts concerning my son be gone. Some time ago, Garga Muni spoke to me as follows about this boy. Your son, Krishna, appears as an incarnation in every millennium. In the past, he assumed 3 different colors, white, red, and yellow, and now he has appeared in a blackish color. For many reasons, this beautiful son of yours sometimes appeared previously as the son of Vasudev. Therefore, those who are learned sometimes call this child Vasudev. For this son of yours, there are many forms and names according to his transcendental qualities and activities. These are known to me, but people in general do not understand them. To increase the transcendental bliss of the cowherd men of Gokula, this child will always act auspiciously for you. And by his grace only, you will surpass all difficulties. O Nanda Maharaj, as recorded in history, when there was an irregular, incapable government, Indra having been dethroned, and when honest people were being harassed and disturbed by thieves, this child appeared in order to curb the rogues and to protect the people and enable them to flourish. Demons cannot harm the demigods who always have Lord Vishnu on their side. Similarly, any person or group attached to all auspicious Krishna cannot be defeated by enemies. Therefore, O Nanda, this child of yours is as good as Narayan. In his transcendental qualities, opulence, name, fame, and influence, he is exactly like Narayan. Thus, you should not be astonished by his activities. Nanda Maharaj continued, After Garga Rishi spoke these words to me and returned home, I began to consider that Krishna, who keeps us free from trouble, is actually an expansion of Lord Narayan. Shukadeva Goswami continued, Having heard Nanda Maharaj relate the statements of Garga Muni, the residents of Vrindavan became enlivened. Their perplexity was gone, and they worshipped Nanda and Lord Krishna with great respect. Deve Varshita Yagna Viplavarusha Vadrashma Varshanilai Siddhat Pala Pashustri Atma Shadanam Dishvana Kamputsmayan Utpatyaka Karena Shailam Amaloli Lotilindram Yata Vimran Goshnam Apan Mahindra Malabitpi Yana Indrogava. Indra became angry when his sacrifice was disrupted. And thus he caused rain and hail to fall on Gokula, accompanied by lightning and powerful winds, all of which brought great suffering to the cowherds, animals, and women there. When Lord Krishna, who is by nature always compassionate, saw the condition of those who had only him as their shelter, he smiled broadly and lifted Govardhan Hill with one hand, just as a small child picks up a mushroom to play with it. In this way, he protected the cowherd community. May he, Govinda, the lord of the cows and the destroyer of Indra's false pride, be pleased with us. Chapter 27, Lord Indra and Mother Surabhi offer prayers. Shukadeva Goswami said, after Krishna had lifted Govardhan Hill and thus protected the inhabitants of Braja from the terrible rainfall, Surabhi, the mother of the cows, came from her planet to see Krishna. She was accompanied by Indra. Indra was very ashamed of having offended the Lord. Approaching him in a solitary place, Indra fell down and lay his helmet, whose effulgence was as brilliant as the sun, upon the Lord's lotus feet. Indra had now heard of and seen the transcendental power of omnipotent Krishna, and his false pride at being the Lord of the three worlds was thus defeated. Holding his hands together in supplication, he addressed the Lord as follows.
Indra uvacho Vishuddha sattvam tavadhama shantam tapomayam vastarajastamaskam mayamayoyam gunasambravaho navindyate de grahananubandha kutona tanhe tava isha tatkrita lobhadayoye bodolinga bhava tatapi dandam bhagavan vibharti dharmasya gupyai kalanigrahayo. Pita gorastam jagatam hadisho toratya kala upata bandho hitaya chichatana bhisa mihasi manam vidunvan jagadisha maninam ye man vidagya jagadisha maninas tvam vikshakale bhayamashu tanmadam hit vayamagam papajancha pasmaya iha kalanam apitenu shasanam.
King Indra said, your transcendental form, a manifestation of pure goodness, is undisturbed by change, shining with knowledge, and devoid of passion and ignorance. In you does not exist the mighty flow of the modes of material nature, which is based on illusion and ignorance. How then could there exist in you the symptoms of an ignorant person, such as greed, lust, anger, and envy, which are produced by one's previous involvement in material existence, and which cause one to become further entangled in material existence? And yet, as the Supreme Lord, you impose punishment to protect religious principles and curb down the wicked. You are the father and spiritual master of this entire universe, and also its supreme controller. You are insurmountable time, imposing punishment upon the sinful for their own benefit. Indeed, in your various incarnations, selected by your own free will, you act decisively to remove the false pride of those who presume themselves masters of this world. Even fools like me, who proudly think themselves universal lords, quickly give up their conceit and directly take to the path of the spiritually progressive when they see you are fearless even in the face of time. Thus you punish the mischievous only to instruct them. Engrossed in pride over my ruling power, ignorant of your majesty, I offended you. O Lord, may you please forgive me. My intelligence was bewildered, but let my consciousness never again be so impure. You descend into this world, O transcendent Lord, to destroy the warlords who burden the earth and create many terrible disturbances. O Lord, you simultaneously act for the welfare of those who faithfully serve your lotus feet. Obeisances unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Great Soul, who are all-pervading and who reside in the hearts of all. My obeisance is unto you, Krishna, the chief of the Yadu dynasty. Unto him who assumes transcendental bodies according to the desires of his devotees, unto him whose form is itself pure consciousness, unto him who is everything, who is the seed of everything, and who is the soul of all creatures, I offer my obeisances. My dear Lord, when my sacrifice was disrupted, I became fiercely angry because of false pride. Thus I tried to destroy your cowherd community with severe rain and wind. O Lord, You have shown mercy to me by shattering my false pride and defeating my attempt to punish Vrindavan. To you, the Supreme Lord, spiritual master and supreme soul, I have now come for shelter. Shukadev Goswami said, thus glorified by Indra, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, smiled and then spoke to him as follows in a voice resonant like the clouds. My dear Indra, it was out of mercy that I stopped the sacrifice meant for you. You were greatly intoxicated by your opulence as King of Heaven, and I wanted you to always remember me. A man blinded by intoxication with his power and opulence cannot see me nearby with the rod of punishment in my hand. If I desire his real welfare, I drag him down from his materially fortunate position. Indra, you may now go. Execute my order and remain in your appointed position as King of Heaven, but be sober without false pride. Then Mother Surabhi, along with her progeny, the cows, offered her obeisances to Lord Krishna. Respectfully requesting his attention, the gentle lady addressed the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was present before her as a cowherd boy. Mother Surabhi said, O Krishna, Krishna, greatest of mystics, O soul and origin of the universe, you are the master of the world, and by your grace, O infallible Lord, we have you as our master. You are our worshipable deity. Therefore, O Lord of the universe, for the benefit of the cows, the Brahmins, the demigods, and all other saintly persons, please become our Indra. As ordered by Lord Brahma, we shall perform your bathing ceremony to coronate you as Indra. O soul of the universe, you descend to this world to relieve the burden of the earth. Shukadev Goswami said, having thus appealed to Lord Krishna, Mother Surabhi performed his bathing ceremony with her own milk, and Indra, ordered by Aditi and other mothers of the demigods, anointed the Lord with heavenly Ganga water from the trunk of Indra's elephant carrier, Airavata. Thus, in the company of the demigods and great sages, Indra coronated Lord Krishna, the descendant of Dasharatha, and gave him the name Govinda. Tumbaru, Narada, and other Gandharvas, along with the Vidyadharas, Siddhas, and Charanas, came there to sing the glories of Lord Hari, which purify the entire world. And the wives of the demigods, filled with joy, danced together in the Lord's honor. The most eminent demigods chanted the praises of the Lord and scattered wonderful showers of flowers all around him. All three worlds felt supreme satisfaction, and the cows drenched the surface of the earth with their milk. Rivers flowed with various kinds of tasty liquids. Trees exuded honey. Edible plants came to maturity without cultivation, and hills gave forth jewels formerly hidden in their interiors. O Parikshit, beloved of the Kuru dynasty, upon the ceremonial bathing of Lord Krishna, all living creatures, even those cruel by nature, became entirely free of enmity. After he had ceremonially bathed Lord Govinda, who is the master of the cows and the cowherd community, King Indra took the Lord's permission, and surrounded by the demigods and other higher beings, returned to his heavenly abode. Chapter 28, Krishna rescues Nanda Maharaj from the abode of Varuna. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, having worshipped Lord Janardhan and fasted on the Ekadashi day, Nanda Maharaj entered the water of the Kalindi on the Dwadashi day to take his bath. Because Nanda Maharaj entered the water in the dark of night, disregarding that the time was inauspicious, a demoniac servant of Varuna seized him and brought him to his master. Not seeing King Nanda, the cowherd men loudly cried out, O Krishna! O Rama! Lord Krishna heard their cries and understood that his father had been captured by Varuna. Therefore, the Almighty Lord, who makes his devotees fearless, went to the court of Varunadev. Seeing that the Lord Rishikesh had arrived, the demigod Varuna worshipped him with elaborate offerings. Varuna was in a state of great jubilation upon seeing the Lord, and he spoke as follows. Now my body has fulfilled its function. Indeed, now the goal of my life is achieved, O Lord. Those who accept your lotus feet, O Personality of Godhead, can transcend the path of material existence. My obeisances unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Soul, within whom there is no trace of the illusory energy which orchestrates the creation of this world. Your father, who is sitting here, was brought to me by a foolish, ignorant servant of mine, who did not understand his proper duty. Therefore, please forgive us. O Krishna, O seer of everything, please give your mercy even to me. O Govinda, you are most affectionate to your father. Please take him home. Shukadev Goswami said, thus satisfied by Lord Varuna, Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord of Lords, took his father and returned home, where their relatives were overjoyed to see them. Nanda Maharaj had been astonished to see for the first time the great opulence of Varuna, the ruler of the ocean planet, and also to see how Varuna and his servants had offered such humble respect to Krishna. Nanda described all this to his fellow cowherd men. Hearing about Krishna's pastimes with Varuna, the cowherd men considered that Krishna must be the Supreme Lord, and their minds, O King, were filled with eagerness. They thought, will the Supreme Lord bestow upon us his transcendental abode? Because he sees everything, Lord Krishna automatically understood what the cowherd men were conjecturing. Wanting to show his compassion to them by fulfilling their desires, the Lord thought as follows. Certainly, people in this world are wandering among higher and lower destinations, which they achieve through activities performed according to their desires and without full knowledge. Thus, people do not know their real destination. Deeply considering the situation in this way, the all-merciful Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, revealed to the cowherd men his abode, which is beyond material darkness. Lord Krishna revealed the indestructible spiritual effulgence, which is unlimited, conscious, and eternal. Sages see that spiritual existence in trance when their consciousness is free of the modes of material nature. The cowherd men were brought by Lord Krishna to the Brahma Radha, the Brahman lake, made to submerge in the water and then lifted up. From the same vantage point that Akrura would later see the spiritual world, the cowherd men saw the planet of the Absolute Truth. Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men felt the greatest happiness when they saw that transcendental abode. They were especially amazed to see Krishna himself there, surrounded by the personified Vedas, who were offering him prayers. Chapter 29. Krishna and the Gopis meet for the Rasa dance. Srila Shukadev Goswami said, Sri Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, full in all opulences. Yet upon seeing those autumn nights scented with blossoming jasmine flowers, he turned his mind toward loving affairs. To fulfill his purposes, he employed his internal potency. The moon then rose, anointing the face of the western horizon with the reddish hue of his comforting rays, and thus dispelling the pain of all who watched him rise. The moon was like a beloved husband who returns after a long absence and adorns the face of his beloved wife with red kumkum. Lord Krishna saw the unbroken disk of the full moon glowing with the red effulgence of newly applied vermilion, as if it were the face of the goddess of fortune. He also saw the Kumuda lotuses opening in response to the moon's presence, and the forest gently illumined by its rays. Thus the Lord began to play sweetly on his flute, attracting the minds of the beautiful-eyed gopis. When the young women of Vrindavan heard Krishna's flute song, which arouses romantic feelings, their minds were captivated by the Lord. They went to where their lover waited, each unknown to the others, moving so quickly that their earrings swung back and forth. Some of the gopis were milking cows when they heard Krishna's flute. They stopped milking and went off to meet him. Some left milk curdling on the stove, and others left cakes burning in the oven. Some of them were getting dressed, feeding milk to their infants or rendering personal service to their husbands, but they all gave up these duties and went to meet Krishna. Other gopis were taking their evening meals, washing themselves, putting on cosmetics, or applying kajal to their eyes. But all the gopis stopped these activities at once, and though their clothes and ornaments were in complete disarray, rushed off to Krishna. Their husbands, fathers, brothers, and other relatives tried to stop them, but Krishna had already stolen their hearts. Enchanted by the sound of his flute, they refused to turn back. Some of the gopis, however, could not manage to get out of their houses, and instead they remained home with their eyes closed, meditating upon him in pure love. For those gopis who could not go to see Krishna, intolerable separation from their beloved caused an intense agony that burned away all impious karma. By meditating upon him, they realized his embrace, and the ecstasy they then felt exhausted their material piety. Although Lord Krishna is the Supreme Soul, these girls simply thought of him as their male lover and associated with him in that intimate mood. Thus, their karmic bondage was nullified and they abandoned their gross material bodies. Sri Parikshit Maharaj said, O sage, the gopis knew Krishna only as their lover, not as the supreme absolute truth. So how could these girls, their minds caught up in the waves of the modes of nature, free themselves from material attachment? Shukadev Goswami said, This point was explained to you previously. Since even Shishupal, who hated Krishna, achieved perfection, then what to speak of the Lord's dear devotees? O King, the Supreme Lord is inexhaustible and immeasurable, and he is untouched by the material modes because he is their controller. His personal appearance in this world is meant for bestowing the highest benefit on humanity. Persons who constantly direct their lust, anger, fear, protective affection, feeling of impersonal oneness, or friendship toward Lord Hari are sure to become absorbed in thought of him. You should not be so astonished by Krishna, the unborn master of all masters of mystic power, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After all, it is the Lord who liberates this world. Seeing that the girls of Braja had arrived, Lord Krishna, the best of speakers, greeted them with charming words that bewildered their minds. Lord Krishna said, O most fortunate ladies, welcome. What may I do to please you? Is everything well in Braja? Please tell me the reason for your coming here. This night is quite frightening, and terrible creatures are lurking about. Return to Braja, O slender-waisted girls. This is not a proper place for women. Not finding you at home, your mothers, fathers, sons, brothers, and husbands are certainly searching for you. Don't cause anxiety for your family members. Now you have seen this Vrindavan forest, full of flowers and resplendent with the light of the full moon. You have seen the beauty of the trees, with their leaves trembling in the gentle breeze coming from the Yamuna. So now go back to the cowherd village. Don't delay. O chaste ladies, serve your husbands and give milk to your crying babies and calves. On the other hand, perhaps you have come here out of your great love for me, which has taken control of your hearts. This is, of course, quite commendable on your part, since all living entities possess natural affection for me. The highest religious duty of a woman is to sincerely serve her husband, behave well toward her husband's family, and take good care of her children. Women who desire a good destination in the next life should never abandon a husband who has not fallen from his religious standards, even if he is obnoxious, unfortunate, old, unintelligent, sickly, or poor. For a woman from a respectable family, petty adulterous affairs are always condemned. They bar her from heaven, ruin her reputation, and bring her difficulty and fear. Transcendental love for me arises by the devotional processes of hearing about me, seeing my deity form, meditating upon me, and faithfully chanting my glories. The same result is not achieved by mere physical proximity. So please go back to your homes. Shukadev Goswami said, Hearing these unpleasant words spoken by Govinda, the gopis became morose. Their great hopes were frustrated, and they felt insurmountable anxiety. Their heads hanging down and their heavy, sorrowful breathing drying up their reddened lips, the gopis scratched the ground with their toes. Tears flowed from their eyes, carrying their cudgel and washing away the vermilion smeared on their breasts. Thus they stood, silently bearing the burden of their unhappiness. Although Krishna was their beloved, and although they had abandoned all other objects of desire for his sake, he had been speaking to them unfavorably. Nonetheless, they remained unflinching in their attachment to him. Stopping their crying, they wiped their eyes and began to speak, their voices stammering with agitation.
Shri Gopya Uchu, my Vang Vibo Hati Bhavan Kaditung Nishansam, Santyanja Sava Vishyang Sava Paramulam, Bhakta Bhajasa Dada Vagraha Macha Jasman, Devo Yatadi Purusho Bhajate Mumukshu. Yat Patya Patya Suridam Manuvritti Ranga, Stri Nam Sudharma Iti Dharma Vedatva Yoktam, Astvev meta dupadesha padeta yishi, Vrishto bhavang tanubhatam kila bandaratma. Kovanti hita hivatim kushalasvat atman, Nitya priye patisutadi bharati daikim, Tannak pasida padamesha namasma chindya, Asham ditam trihichira dadavinda netra. Chittam sukena bhavata paditam graheshu yanne vishat chitakarava pigriya kritti bharopadam chalatastava paramulad yamakatam vajamato kadavama kingva.
beautiful gopi said, "O all-powerful one, you should not speak in this cruel way. Do not reject us, who have renounced all material enjoyment to render devotional service to your lotus feet. Reciprocate with us, O stubborn one, just as the primeval lord, Sri Narayan, reciprocates with his devotees in their endeavors for liberation. Our dear Krishna, as an expert in religion, you have advised us that the proper religious duty for women is to faithfully serve their husbands, children, and other relatives. We agree that this principle is valid, but actually, this service should be rendered to you. After all, O Lord, you are the dearmost friend of all embodied souls. You are their most intimate relative, and indeed their very self. Expert transcendentalists always direct their affection toward you because they recognize you as their true self and eternal beloved. What use do we have for these husbands, children, and relatives of ours who simply give us trouble? Therefore, O Supreme Controller, grant us your mercy. O Lotus-Eyed One, please do not cut down our long-cherished hope to have your association. Until today, our minds were absorbed in household affairs, but you easily stole both our minds and our hands away from our housework. Now our feet won't move one step from your lotus feet. How can we go back to Braja? What would we do there? Dear Krishna, please pour the nectar of your lips upon the fire within our hearts, a fire you ignited with your smiling glances and the sweet song of your flute. If you do not, we will consign our bodies to the fire of separation from you, O friend, and thus, like yogis, attain to the abode of your lotus feet by meditation. O lotus-eyed one, the goddess of fortune considers it a festive occasion whenever she touches the soles of your lotus feet. You are very dear to the residents of the forest, and therefore we will also touch those lotus feet. From that time on, we will be unable even to stand in the presence of any other man, for we will have been fully satisfied by you. Goddess Lakshmi, whose glance is sought after by the demigods with great endeavor, has achieved the unique position of always remaining on the chest of her lord, Narayan. Still, she desires the dust of his lotus feet, even though she has to share that dust with Tulsi Devi and indeed with the Lord's many other servants. Similarly, we have approached the dust of your lotus feet for shelter. Therefore, O vanquisher of all distress, please show us mercy. To approach your lotus feet, we abandoned our families and homes, and we have no desire other than to serve you. Our hearts are burning with intense desires generated by your beautiful smiling glances. O jewel among men, please make us your maidservants. Seeing your face encircled by curling locks of hair, your cheeks beautified by earrings, your lips full of nectar, and your smiling glance, and also seeing your two imposing arms, which take away our fear, and your chest, which is the only source of pleasure for the goddess of fortune, we must become your maidservants. Dear Krishna, what woman in all the three worlds wouldn't deviate from religious behavior when bewildered by the sweet, drawn-out melody of your flute? Your beauty makes all three worlds auspicious. Indeed, even the cows, birds, trees, and deer manifest the ecstatic symptom of bodily hair standing on end when they see your beautiful form. Clearly, you have taken birth in this world to relieve the fear and distress of the people of Braja, just as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Primeval Lord, protects the domain of the demigods. Therefore, O friend of the distressed, kindly place your lotus hand on your maidservants' heads and burning breasts. Shukadeva Goswami said, smiling upon hearing these despondent words from the gopis, Lord Krishna, the supreme master of all masters of mystic yoga, mercifully enjoyed with them, although he is self-satisfied. Among the assembled gopis, the infallible Lord Krishna appeared just like the moon surrounded by stars. He whose activities are so magnanimous made their faces blossom with his affectionate glances, and his broad smiles revealed the effulgence of his jasmine bud-like teeth. As the gopis sang his praises, that leader of hundreds of women sang loudly in reply. He moved among them, wearing his Vaijayanti garland, beautifying the Vrindavan forest. Sri Krishna went with the gopis to the bank of the Yamuna, where the sand was cooling and the wind, enlivened by the river's waves, bore the fragrance of lotuses. There Krishna threw his arms around the gopis and embraced them. He aroused Cupid in the beautiful young ladies of Braja by touching their hands, hair, thighs, belts, and breasts, by playfully scratching them with his fingernails, and also by joking with them, glancing at them, and laughing with them. In this way, the Lord enjoyed his pastimes. The gopis became proud of themselves for having received such special attention from Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and each of them thought herself the best woman on earth. Lord Keshava, seeing the gopis too proud of their good fortune, wanted to relieve them of this pride and show them further mercy. Thus, he immediately disappeared. Chapter 30, The Gopis Search for Krishna. Shukadev Goswami said, "When Lord Krishna disappeared so suddenly, the gopis felt great sorrow at losing sight of him, like a group of female elephants who have lost their mate. As the cowherd women remembered Lord Krishna, their hearts were overwhelmed by his movements and loving smiles, his playful glances and enchanting talks, and by the many other pastimes he would enjoy with them. Thus absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, the Lord of Rama, the gopis began acting out his various transcendental pastimes. Because the gopis were absorbed in thoughts of their beloved Krishna, their bodies imitated his way of moving and smiling, his way of beholding them, his speech, and his other distinctive features. Deeply immersed in thinking of him and maddened by remembering his pastimes, they declared to one another, 'I am Krishna!' Singing loudly of Krishna, they searched for him throughout the Vrindavan forest like a band of madwomen. They even asked the trees about him, who, as the Supersoul, is present inside and outside of all created things, just like the sky." The gopis said, "O Ashvata tree, O Plaksha, O Nyagrodha, have you seen Krishna? That son of Nanda Maharaj has gone away after stealing our minds with his loving smiles and glances. O Kurubaka tree, O Ashoka, O Naga, Punaga, and Champaka, has Balaram's younger brother, whose smile removes the audacity of all proud women, passed this way? O most kind Tulsi, to whom the feet of Govinda are so dear, have you seen that infallible one walk by, wearing you and encircled by swarms of bees? O Malati, O Malika, O Jati and Yutika, has Madhava gone by here, giving you pleasure with the touch of his hand? O Chuta, O Priyala, O Panasa, Asana and Kovidar, O Jambu, O Arka, O Bilva, Bakula and Amra, O Kadamba and Nipa, and all you other plants and trees living by the banks of the Yamuna, who have dedicated your very existence to the welfare of others, we gopis have lost our minds, so please tell us where Krishna has gone. O Mother Earth, what austerity did you perform to attain the touch of Lord Keshava's lotus feet, which has brought you such great joy that your bodily hairs are standing on end? You appear very beautiful in this condition. Was it during the Lord's current appearance that you acquired this ecstatic symptom, or was it perhaps much earlier, when he stepped upon you in his form of the dwarf Vamanadev, or even earlier, when he embraced you in his form of the boar Varahadev? O friend, wife of the deer, has Lord Achyuta been here with his beloved, bringing great joy to your eyes? Indeed, blowing this way is the fragrance of his garland of kunda flowers, which was smeared with the kumkum from the breast of his girlfriend when he embraced her. O trees, we see that you are bowing down. When the younger brother of Rama walked by here, followed by intoxicated bees swarming around the tulsi manjaris decorating his garland, did he acknowledge your obeisances with his affectionate glances? He must have been resting his arm on the shoulder of his beloved and carrying a lotus flower in his free hand. Let us ask these creepers about Krishna. Even though they are embracing the arms of their husband, this tree, they certainly must have been touched by Krishna's fingernails, since out of joy they are manifesting eruptions on their skin." Having spoken these words, the gopis, distraught from searching for Krishna, began to act out his various pastimes, fully absorbed in thoughts of him. One gopi imitated Putana, while another acted like infant Krishna and pretended to suck her breast. Another gopi, crying in imitation of infant Krishna, kicked a gopi who was taking the role of the cart demon, Shakatasura. One gopi took the role of Trinavarta and carried away another who was acting like infant Krishna, while yet another gopi crawled about, her ankle bells tinkling as she pulled her feet. Two gopis acted like Rama and Krishna in the midst of several others who took the role of cowherd boys. One gopi enacted Krishna's killing of the demon Vatsasura, represented by another gopi, and a pair of gopis acted out the killing of Bakasura. When one gopi perfectly imitated how Krishna would call the cows who had wandered far away, how he would play his flute, and how he would engage in various sports, the others congratulated her with exclamations of, "Well done, well done." Another gopi, her mind fixed on Krishna, walked about with her arm resting on the shoulder of a friend and declared, "I am Krishna. Just see how gracefully I move." "Don't be afraid of the wind and rain," said one gopi. "I will save you." And with that, she lifted her shawl above her head. One gopi climbed on another's shoulders and, putting her foot on the other's head, said, "Go away from here, O wicked snake. You should know that I have taken birth in this world just to punish the envious." Then another gopi spoke up. "My dear cowherd boys, look at this raging forest fire. Quickly close your eyes and I will easily protect you." One gopi tied up her slender companion with a flower garland and said, "Now I will bind this boy who has broken the butter pots and stolen the butter." The second gopi then covered her face and beautiful eyes, pretending to be afraid. While the gopis were thus imitating Krishna's pastimes and asking Vrindavan's creepers and trees where Krishna, the Supreme Soul, might be, they happened to see his footprints in a corner of the forest. The gopis said, "The marks of a flag, lotus, thunderbolt, elephant goad, barley corn, and so forth on these footprints clearly distinguish them as belonging to that great soul, the son of Nanda Maharaj." The gopis began following Krishna's path, as shown by his many footprints. But when they saw that these prints were thoroughly intermixed with those of his dearmost consort, they became perturbed and spoke as follows. "Here we see the footprints of some gopi who must have been walking along with the son of Nanda. He must have put his arm on her shoulder, just as an elephant rests his trunk on the shoulder of an accompanying she-elephant. Certainly this particular gopi has perfectly worshipped the all-powerful personality of Godhead, Govinda, since he was so pleased with her that he abandoned the rest of us and brought her to a secluded place. O girls, the dust of Govinda's lotus feet is so sacred that even Brahma, Shiva, and the goddess Rama take that dust upon their heads to dispel sinful reactions. These footprints of that special gopi greatly disturb us. Of all the gopis, she alone was taken away to a secluded place, where she is enjoying the lips of Krishna. Look, we can't see her footprints over here. It's obvious that the grass and sprouts were hurting the tender soles of her feet, and so the lover lifted up his beloved. Please observe, my dear gopis, how in this place lusty Krishna's footprints are pressed more deeply into the ground. Carrying the weight of his beloved must have been difficult for him. And over here, that intelligent boy must have put her down to gather some flowers. Just see how in this place, dear Krishna collected flowers for his beloved. Here he has left the impression of only the front part of his feet, because he was standing on his toes to reach the flowers. Certainly Krishna sat down here with his girlfriend to arrange your hair. The lusty boy must have made a crown for that lusty girl out of the flowers he had collected." Shukadeva Goswami continued, "Lord Krishna enjoyed with that gopi, although he enjoys only within, being self-satisfied and complete in himself, not as ordinary lusty men and hard-hearted women. As the gopis wandered about, their minds completely bewildered, they pointed out various signs of Krishna's pastimes. The particular gopi whom Krishna had led into a secluded forest when he had abandoned all the other young girls began to think herself the best of women. 'My beloved has rejected all the other gopis,' she thought, 'even though they are driven by Cupid himself. He has chosen to reciprocate with me alone.' As the two lovers passed through one part of the Vrindavan forest, the special gopi began feeling proud of herself. She told Lord Keshava, 'I cannot walk any further. Please carry me wherever you want to go.' Thus addressed, Lord Krishna replied, 'Just climb on my shoulder.' But as soon as he said this, he disappeared. His beloved consort then immediately felt great remorse. She cried out, 'O master, my lover, O dearmost, where are you? Where are you? Please, O mighty armed one, O friend, show yourself to me, your poor servant.' Shukadeva Goswami said, 'While continuing to search out Krishna's path, the gopis discovered their unhappy friend close by. She was bewildered by separation from her lover. She told them how Madhava had given her much respect, but how she then suffered dishonor because of her misbehavior. The gopis were extremely amazed to hear this. In search of Krishna, the gopis then entered the depths of the forest as far as the light of the moon shone. But when they found themselves engulfed in darkness, they decided to turn back. Their minds absorbed in thoughts of him, they conversed about him, acted out his pastimes, and felt themselves filled with his presence. They completely forgot about their homes as they loudly sang the glories of Krishna's transcendental qualities. The gopis again came to the bank of the Kalindi. meditating on Krishna and eagerly hoping he would come, they sat down together to sing of him. Chapter 31, The Gopi Songs of Separation. Gopya uchu jayati te dikam janmana vrajakshayata indarashasratrahi jayata drishyatam dikshuta vakastohi jutasavastvam vachindvate shodadu dashiye sarajata sat sadasi jodadashi mushadrisha sudatanatati shulka dasika vadadanignado nehekimvadho Vishjalapayan vyala rakshasan varshamadatan vajutanalat Vishmayatmajan vishutomayan vishbatevayam rakshitamahu Nakula gopika nanda no bhavan nakula dehi namantaratmadrit Vikanasartito vishguptiye sakudehi vansatvatam kule Vajjanati han vidi yoshitam vijjanasmaya dvansanasmita Vajjasake bhavat kinkarismano jaladuhananam charudarshaya The gopi said, O beloved, your birth in the land of Braja has made it exceedingly glorious, and thus Indira, the goddess of fortune, always resides here. It is only for your sake that we, your devoted servants, maintain our lives. We have been searching everywhere for you, so please show yourself to us. O Lord of Love, in beauty your glance excels the whirl of the finest, most perfectly formed lotus within the autumn pond. O bestower of benedictions, you are killing the maidservants who have given themselves to you freely, without any price. Isn't this murder? O greatest of personalities, you have repeatedly saved us from all kinds of danger, from poisoned water, from the terrible man-eater Aga, from the great rains, from the wind demon, from the fiery thunderbolt of Indra, from the bull demon, and from the son of Maya Danava. You are not actually the son of the gopi Yashoda, O friend, but rather the indwelling witness in the hearts of all embodied souls. Because Lord Brahma prayed for you to come and protect the universe, you have now appeared in the Satvata dynasty. O best of the Vrishnis, your lotus-like hand, which holds the hand of the goddess of fortune, grants fearlessness to those who approach your feet out of fear of material existence. O lover, please place that wish-fulfilling lotus hand on our heads. O you who destroy the suffering of Braja's people, O hero of all women, your smile shatters the false pride of your devotees. Please, dear friend, accept us as your maidservants and show us your beautiful lotus face. Your lotus feet destroy the past sins of all embodied souls who surrender to them. Those feet follow after the cows in the pastures and are the eternal abode of the goddess of fortune. Since you once put those feet on the hoods of the great serpent Kaliya, please place them upon our breasts and tear away the lust in our hearts. O lotus-eyed one, your sweet voice and charming words, which attract the minds of the intelligent, are bewildering us more and more. Our dear hero, please revive your maidservants with the nectar of your lips. The nectar of your words and the descriptions of your activities are the life and soul of those suffering in this material world. These narrations, transmitted by learned sages, eradicate one's sinful reactions and bestow good fortune upon whoever hears them. These narrations are broadcast all over the world and are filled with spiritual power. Certainly those who spread the message of Godhead are most munificent. Your smiles, your sweet loving glances, the intimate pastimes and confidential talks we enjoyed with you, all these are auspicious to meditate upon, and they touch our hearts. But at the same time, O deceiver, they very much agitate our minds. Dear master, dear lover, when you leave the cowherd village to herd the cows, our minds are disturbed with the thought that your feet, more beautiful than a lotus, will be pricked by the spiked husks of grain and the rough grass and plants. At the end of the day, you repeatedly show us your lotus face, covered with dark blue locks of hair and thickly powdered with dust. Thus, O hero, you arouse lusty desires in our minds. Your lotus feet, which are worshipped by Lord Brahma, fulfill the desires of all who bow down to them. They are the ornament of the earth, and in times of danger they are the appropriate object of meditation. O destroyer of anxiety, please put those lotus feet upon our breasts. O hero, kindly distribute to us the nectar of your lips, which enhances conjugal pleasure and vanquishes grief. That nectar is thoroughly relished by your vibrating flute and makes people forget any other attachment. When you go off to the forest during the day, a tiny fraction of a second becomes like a millennium for us because we cannot see you. And even when we can eagerly look upon your lotus face, so lovely with its adornment of curly locks, our pleasure is hindered by our eyelids, which were fashioned by the foolish creator. Dear Achyuta, you know very well why we have come here. Who but a cheater like you would abandon young women who come to see him in the middle of the night, enchanted by the loud song of his flute? Just to see you, we have completely rejected our husbands, children, ancestors, brothers, and other relatives. Our minds are repeatedly bewildered as we think of the intimate conversations we had with you in secret, feel the rise of lust in our hearts, and remember your smiling face, your loving glances, and your broad chest, the resting place of the goddess of fortune. Thus we experience the most severe hankering for you. Oh, beloved, your all-auspicious appearance vanquishes the distress of those living in Bruges forests. Our minds long for your association. Please give to us just a bit of that medicine which counteracts the disease in your devotees' hearts. Oh, dearly beloved, your lotus feet are so soft that we place them gently on our breasts, fearing that your feet will be hurt. Our life rests only in you. Our minds, therefore, are filled with anxiety that your tender feet might be wounded by pebbles as you roam about on the forest path. Chapter 32, The Reunion. Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, having thus sung and spoken their hearts out in various charming ways, the gopis began to weep loudly. They were very eager to see Lord Krishna. Then Lord Krishna, a smile on his lotus face, appeared before the gopis. Wearing a garland and a yellow garment, he directly appeared as one who can bewilder the mind of Cupid, who himself bewilders the minds of ordinary people. When the gopis saw that their dearmost Krishna had returned to them, they all stood up at once, and out of their affection for him, their eyes bloomed wide. It was as if the air of life had re-entered their bodies. One gopi joyfully took Krishna's hand between her folded palms, and another placed his arm, anointed with sandalwood paste, on her shoulder. A slender gopi respectfully took in her joined hands the betel nut he had chewed, and another gopi, burning with desire, put his lotus feet on her breasts. One gopi, beside herself with loving anger, bit her lips and stared at him with frowning eyebrows, as if to wound him with her harsh glances. Another gopi looked with unblinking eyes upon his lotus face, but even after deeply relishing its sweetness, she did not feel satiated, just as mystic saints are never satiated when meditating upon the Lord's feet. One gopi took the Lord through the aperture of her eyes and placed him within her heart. Then, with her eyes closed and her bodily hair standing on end, she continuously embraced him within. Thus immersed in transcendental ecstasy, she resembled a yogi meditating upon the Lord. All the gopis enjoyed the greatest festivity when they saw their beloved Keshava again. They gave up the distress of separation, just as people in general forget their misery when they gain the association of a spiritually enlightened person. Encircled by the gopis, who were now relieved of all distress, Lord Achyuta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, shone forth splendidly. My dear King, Krishna thus appeared like the supersoul encircled by his spiritual potencies. The Almighty Lord then took the gopis with him to the bank of the Kalindi, who, with the hands of her waves, had scattered piles of soft sand upon the shore. In that auspicious place, the breeze, bearing the fragrance of blooming kunda and mandara flowers, attracted many bees, and the abundant rays of the autumn moon dispelled the darkness of night. Their heartache vanquished by the ecstasy of seeing Krishna, the gopis, like the personified Vedas before them, felt their desires completely fulfilled. For their dear friend Krishna, they arranged a seat with their shawls, which were smeared with the kumkum powder from their breasts. Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for whom the great masters of mystic meditation arrange a seat within their hearts, took his seat in the assembly of gopis. His transcendental body, the exclusive abode of beauty and opulence within the three worlds, shone brilliantly as the gopis worshipped him. Sri Krishna had awakened romantic desires within the gopis, and they honored him by glancing at him with playful smiles, gesturing amorously with their eyebrows, and massaging his hands and feet as they held them in their laps. Even while worshipping him, however, they felt somewhat angry, and thus they addressed him as follows. Some people reciprocate the affection only of those who are affectionate toward them, while others show affection even to those who are indifferent or inimical. And yet others will not show affection toward anyone. Dear Krishna, please properly explain this matter to us. Lord Krishna said, so-called friends who show affection for each other only to benefit themselves are actually selfish. They have no true friendship, nor are they following the true principles of religion. Indeed, if they did not expect benefit for themselves, they would not reciprocate. My dear slender-waisted gopis, some people are genuinely merciful or, like parents, naturally affectionate. Such persons, who devotedly serve even those who fail to reciprocate with them, are following the true, faultless path of religion, and they are true well-wishers. Then there are those individuals who are spiritually self-satisfied, materially fulfilled, or by nature ungrateful or simply envious of superiors. Such persons will not love even those who love them, what to speak of those who are inimical. But the reason I do not immediately reciprocate the affection of living beings, even when they worship me, O gopis, is that I want to intensify their loving devotion. They then become like a poor man who has gained some wealth and then lost it, and who thus becomes so anxious about it that he can think of nothing else. My dear girls, understanding that simply for my sake you had rejected the authority of worldly opinion, of the Vedas, and of your relatives, I acted as I did only to increase your attachment to me. Even when I removed myself from your sight by suddenly disappearing, I never stopped loving you. Therefore, my beloved gopis, please do not harbor any bad feelings toward me, your beloved. I am not able to repay my debt for your spotless service, even within a lifetime of Brahma. Your connection with me is beyond reproach. You have worshipped me, cutting off all domestic ties, which are difficult to break. Therefore, please let your own glorious deeds be your compensation. Chapter 33, The Rasa Dance. Shukadev Goswami said, when the cowherd girls heard the Supreme Personality of Godhead speak these most charming words, they forgot their distress caused by separation from him. Touching his transcendental limbs, they felt all their desires fulfilled. There on the Yamuna's banks, Lord Govinda then began the pastime of the Rasa dance in the company of those jewels among women, the faithful gopis, who joyfully linked their arms together. The festive Rasa dance commenced with the gopis arrayed in a circle. Lord Krishna expanded himself and entered between each pair of gopis, and as that master of mystic power placed his arms around their necks, each girl thought he was standing next to her alone. The demigods and their wives were overwhelmed with eagerness to witness the Rasa dance, and they soon crowded the sky with their hundreds of celestial airplanes. Kettle drums then resounded in the sky while flowers rained down and the chief Gandharvas and their wives sang Lord Krishna's spotless glories. A tumultuous sound arose from the armlets, ankle bells, and waist bells of the gopis as they sported with their beloved Krishna in the circle of the Rasa dance. In the midst of the dancing gopis, Lord Krishna appeared most brilliant, like an exquisite sapphire in the midst of golden ornaments. As the gopis sang in praise of Krishna, their feet danced, their hands gestured, and their eyebrows moved with playful smiles. With their braids and belts tied tight, their waists bending, their faces perspiring, the garments on their breasts moving this way and that, and their earrings swinging on their cheeks, Lord Krishna's young consorts shone like streaks of lightning in a mass of clouds. Eager to enjoy conjugal love, their throats colored with various pigments, the gopis sang loudly and danced. They were overjoyed by Krishna's touch, and they sang songs that filled the entire universe. One gopi, joining Lord Mukunda in his singing, sang pure melodious tones that rose harmoniously above his. Krishna was pleased and showed great appreciation for her performance, saying, "Excellent, excellent!" Then another gopi repeated the same melody, but in a special metrical pattern, and Krishna praised her also. When one gopi grew tired from the Rasa dance, she turned to Krishna, standing at her side holding a baton, and grasped his shoulder with her arm. The dancing had loosened her bracelets and the flowers in her hair. Upon the shoulder of one gopi, Krishna placed his arm, whose natural blue lotus fragrance was mixed with that of the sandalwood pulp anointing it. As the gopi relished that fragrance, her bodily hair stood on end in jubilation, and she kissed his arm. Next to Krishna's cheek, one gopi put her own, beautified by the effulgence of her earrings, which glittered as she danced. Krishna then carefully gave her the betel nut he was chewing. Another gopi became fatigued as she danced and sang, the bells on her ankles and waist tinkling. So she placed upon her breast the comforting lotus hand of Lord Achyuta, who was standing by her side. Having attained as their intimate lover, Lord Achyuta, the exclusive consort of the goddess of fortune, the gopis enjoyed great pleasure. They sang his glories as he held their necks with his arms. Enhancing the beauty of the gopis' faces were the lotus flowers behind their ears, the locks of hair decorating their cheeks, and drops of perspiration. The reverberation of their armlets and ankle bells made a loud musical sound, and their chaplets scattered. Thus the gopis danced with the Supreme Lord in the arena of the Rasa dance, as swarms of bees sang in accompaniment. In this way, Lord Krishna, the original Lord Narayan, master of the goddess of fortune, took pleasure in the company of the young women of Braja by embracing them, caressing them, and glancing lovingly at them as he smiled his broad, playful smiles. It was just as if a child were playing with his own reflection. Their senses overwhelmed by the joy of having his physical association, the gopis could not prevent their hair, their dresses, and the cloths covering their breasts from becoming disheveled. Their garlands and ornaments scattered, O hero of the Kuru dynasty. The wives of the demigods, observing Krishna's playful activities from their airplanes, were entranced and became agitated with lust. Indeed, even the moon and his entourage, the stars, became astonished. Expanding himself as many times as there were cowherd women to associate with, the Supreme Lord, though self-satisfied, playfully enjoyed their company. Seeing that the gopis were fatigued from conjugal enjoyment, merciful Krishna lovingly wiped their faces with his comforting hand. The gopis honored their hero with smiling glances, sweetened by the beauty of their cheeks and the effulgence of their curly locks and glittering golden earrings. Overjoyed from the touch of his fingernails, they chanted the glories of his all-auspicious transcendental pastimes. Lord Krishna's garland had been crushed during his conjugal dalliance with the gopis and colored vermilion by the kumkum powder on their breasts. To dispel the fatigue of the gopis, Krishna entered the water of the Yamuna, followed swiftly by bees who were singing like the best of the Gandharvas. He appeared like a lordly elephant entering the water to relax in the company of his consorts. Indeed, the Lord had transgressed all worldly and Vedic morality, just as a powerful elephant might break the dikes in a paddy field. In the water, Krishna found himself being splashed on all sides by the laughing gopis, who looked at him with love. As the demigods worshipped him by showering flowers from their airplanes, the self-satisfied Lord took pleasure in playing like the king of the elephants. Then the Lord strolled through a small forest on the bank of the Yamuna. This forest was filled to its limits with breezes carrying the fragrances of all the flowers growing on the land and in the water. Followed by his entourage of bees and beautiful women, Lord Krishna appeared like an intoxicated elephant with his she-elephants. Although the gopis were firmly attached to Lord Krishna, whose desires are always fulfilled, the Lord was not internally affected by any mundane sex desire. Still, to perform his pastimes, the Lord took advantage of all those moonlit autumn nights, which inspire poetic descriptions of transcendental affairs. Parikshit Maharaj said, O Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord of the universe, has descended to this earth along with his plenary portion to destroy irreligion and re-establish religious principles. Indeed, he is the original speaker, follower, and guardian of moral laws. How then could he have violated them by touching other men's wives? O faithful upholder of vows, please destroy our doubt by explaining to us what purpose the self-satisfied Lord of the Yadus had in mind when he behaved so contemptibly. Shukadev Goswami said, The status of powerful controllers is not harmed by any apparently audacious transgression of morality we may see in them, for they are just like fire, which devours everything fed into it and remains unpolluted. One who is not a great controller should never imitate the behavior of ruling personalities, even mentally. If, out of foolishness, an ordinary person does imitate such behavior, he will simply destroy himself, just as a person who is not Rudra would destroy himself if he tried to drink an ocean of poison. The statements of the Lord's empowered servants are always true, and the acts they perform are exemplary when consistent with those statements. Therefore, one who is intelligent should carry out their instructions. My dear Prabhu, when these great persons who are free from false ego act piously in this world, they have no selfish motives to fulfill. And even when they act in apparent contradiction to the laws of piety, they are not subject to sinful reactions. How then could the Lord of all created beings, animals, men, and demigods, have any connection with the piety and impiety that affect his subject creatures? Material activities never entangle the devotees of the Supreme Lord, who are fully satisfied by serving the dust of his lotus feet. Nor do material activities entangle those intelligent sages who have freed themselves from the bondage of all fruitive reactions by the power of yoga. So how could there be any question of bondage for the Lord himself, who assumes his transcendental forms according to his own sweet will? He who lives as the overseeing witness within the gopis and their husbands, and indeed within all embodied living beings, assumes forms in this world to enjoy transcendental pastimes. When the Lord assumes a human-like body to show mercy to his devotees, he engages in such pastimes as will attract those who hear about them to become dedicated to him. The cowherd men, bewildered by Krishna's illusory potency, thought their wives had remained home at their sides. Thus, they did not harbor any jealous feelings against him. After an entire night of Brahma had passed, Lord Krishna advised the gopis to return to their homes. Although they did not wish to do so, the Lord's beloved consorts complied with his command. Anyone who faithfully hears or describes the Lord's playful affairs with the young gopis of Vrindavan will attain the Lord's pure devotional service. Thus, he will quickly become sober and conquer lust, the disease of the heart. Chapter 34, Nanda Maharaj Saved and Shankarchuda Slain. Shukadev Goswami said, "One day the cowherd men, eager to take a trip to worship Lord Shiva, traveled by bullock cart to the Ambika forest. After arriving there, they bathed in the Saraswati and then devotedly worshipped with various paraphernalia the powerful Lord Pashupati and his consort, Goddess Ambika. The cowherd men gave the Brahmins gifts of cows, gold, clothing, and cooked grains mixed with honey. Then the cowherds prayed, 'May the Lord be pleased with us.' Nanda, Sunanda, and the other greatly fortunate cowherds spent that night on the bank of the Saraswati, strictly observing their vows. They fasted, taking only water. During the night, a huge and extremely hungry snake appeared in that thicket. Slithering on his belly up to the sleeping Nanda Maharaj, the snake began swallowing him. In the clutches of the snake, Nanda Maharaj cried out, 'Krishna, Krishna, my dear boy, this huge serpent is swallowing me. Please save me, who am surrendered to you.' When the cowherd men heard the cries of Nanda, they immediately rose up and saw that he was being swallowed. Distraught, they beat the serpent with blazing torches. But even though the firebrands were burning him, the serpent would not release Nanda. Then the Supreme Lord Krishna, master of his devotees, came to the spot and touched the snake with his foot. The snake had all his sinful reactions destroyed by the touch of the Supreme Lord's divine foot, and thus he gave up his serpent body and appeared in the form of a worshipable Vidyadhara. The Supreme Lord Rishikesh then questioned this personality, who was standing before him with his head bowed, his brilliantly effulgent body bedecked with golden necklaces. 'My dear sir,' said Krishna, 'you appear so wonderful, glowing with such great beauty. Who are you? And who forced you to assume this terrible body of a snake?' The serpent replied, 'I am the well-known Vidyadhara named Sudarshan. I was very opulent and beautiful, and I used to wander freely in all directions in my airplane. Once I saw some homely sages of the lineage Angira Muni. Proud of my beauty, I ridiculed them, and because of my sin they made me assume this lowly form. It was actually for my benefit that these merciful sages cursed me, since now I have been touched by the foot of the supreme spiritual master of all the worlds, and have thus been relieved of all inauspiciousness. My lord, you destroy all fear for those who, fearing this material world, take shelter of you. By the touch of your feet, I am now freed from the curse of the sages. O destroyer of distress, please let me return to my planet. O master of mystic power, O great personality, O lord of the devotees, I surrender to you. Please command me as you will, O supreme God, lord of all lords of the universe. O infallible one, I was immediately freed from the Brahman's punishment simply by seeing you. Anyone who chants your name purifies all who hear his chanting, as well as himself. How much more beneficial, then, is the touch of your lotus feet?' Thus receiving the permission of Lord Krishna, the demigod Sudarshan circumambulated him, bowed down to offer him homage, and then returned to his heavenly planet. Nanda Maharaj was thus delivered from peril. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, "The inhabitants of Braja were astonished to see the mighty power of Sri Krishna. Dear King, they then completed their worship of Lord Shiva and returned to Braja, along the way respectfully describing Krishna's powerful acts." Once, Lord Govinda and Lord Rama, the performers of wonderful feats, were playing in the forest at night with the young girls of Braja. Krishna and Balaram wore flower garlands and spotless garments, and their limbs were beautifully decorated and anointed. The women sang their glories in a charming way, bound to them by affection. The two lords praised the nightfall, signaled by the rising of the moon and the appearance of stars, a lotus-scented breeze, and bees intoxicated by the fragrance of jasmine flowers. Krishna and Balaram sang, producing the entire musical scale simultaneously. Their singing created happiness for the minds and ears of all living beings. The gopis became stunned when they heard that song. Forgetting themselves, O King, they did not notice that their fine garments were becoming loose and their hair and garlands disheveled. While Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram thus played according to their own sweet will and sang to the point of apparent intoxication, a servant of Govera named Shankachuda came upon the scene. Even as the two lords looked on, Shankachuda brazenly began driving the women off toward the north. The women, who had accepted Krishna and Balaram as their lords, began to cry out to them. Hearing their devotees crying out, "Krishna, Rama!" and seeing that they were just like cows being stolen by a thief, Krishna and Balaram began to run after the demon. The lords called out in reply, "Do not fear!" Then they picked up stones and quickly pursued that lowest of Guhyakas, who swiftly ran away. When Shankachuda saw the two of them coming toward him like the personified forces of time and death, he was filled with anxiety. Confused, he abandoned the women and fled for his life. Lord Govinda chased the demon wherever he ran, eager to take his crest jewel. Meanwhile, Lord Balaram stayed with the women to protect them. The mighty lord overtook Shankachuda from a great distance as if from nearby, and then with his fist, the lord removed the wicked demon's head together with his crest jewel. Having thus killed the demon Shankachuda and taken away his shining jewel, Lord Krishna gave it to his elder brother with great satisfaction as the gopis watched. Chapter 35, The Gopis Sing of Krishna as He Wanders in the Forest. Shukadeva Goswami said, whenever Krishna went to the forest, the minds of the gopis would run after him, and thus the young girls sadly spent their days singing of his pastimes.
Vama bahokata vama kaporol volgitam vadadapata venum komalanka dibadashita margam gopi idiyata yatta mukunda yomayana vanitasaha sinha vismatasta tupadaya salanja kama margana samavata chitta kashmalam yuda pasmita nivya Ahanta chitta mamalasuna tedam hara hasa odasistida vinjut nanda suna layamata jananam namadu yarhi kunjita vino vrindisho vajabhishamaga gabo vino vajivita chetisa aratam dadashta kabalajita karna nindvita lekata chitta me vasam Bahinasta bhagadata palasha bannamalla padibaha vadamba karhi chitsa bala alisa gopaya gasama vayati yatta mukunda tarhi bhagnakata yaksarito vaitat patam vajadado nilanitam spihiyati vayamivabahu punya prema vipatam jastimitapo.
The gopi said, when Mukunda vibrates the flute he has placed to his lips, stopping its holes with his tender fingers, he rests his left cheek on his left arm and makes his eyebrows dance. At that time, the demigoddesses traveling in the sky with their husbands, the siddhas, become amazed. As those ladies listen, they are embarrassed to find their minds yielding to the pursuit of lusty desires, and in their distress, they are unaware that the belts of their garments are loosening. O girls, this son of Nanda who gives joy to the distressed bears steady lightning on his chest and has a smile like a jeweled necklace. Now please hear something wonderful. When he vibrates his flute, Braj's bulls, deer, and cows, standing in groups at a great distance, are all captivated by the sound, and they stop chewing the food in their mouths and cock their ears. Stunned, they appear as if asleep or like figures in a painting. My dear Gopi, sometimes Mukunda imitates the appearance of a wrestler by decorating himself with leaves, peacock feathers, and colored minerals. Then, in the company of Balaram and the cowherd boys, he plays his flute to call the cows. At that time, the rivers stop flowing, their water stunned by the ecstasy they feel as they eagerly wait for the wind to bring them the dust of his lotus feet. But like us, the rivers are not very pious, and thus they merely wait with their arms trembling out of love. Krishna moves about the forest in the company of his friends, who vividly chant the glories of his magnificent deeds. He thus appears just like the Supreme Personality of Godhead exhibiting his inexhaustible opulences. When the cows wander onto the mountainsides and Krishna calls out to them with the sound of his flute, The trees and creepers in the forest respond by becoming so luxuriant with fruits and flowers that they seem to be manifesting Lord Vishnu within their hearts. As their branches bend low with the weight, the filaments on their trunks and vines stand erect out of the ecstasy of love of God, and both the trees and the creepers pour down a rain of sweet sap. Maddened by the divine honey-like aroma of the tulsi flowers on the garland Krishna wears, swarms of bees sing loudly for him, and that most beautiful of all persons thankfully acknowledges and acclaims their song by taking his flute to his lips and playing it. The charming flute song then steals away the minds of the cranes, swans, and other lake-dwelling birds. Indeed, they approach Krishna, close their eyes, and, maintaining strict silence, worship him by fixing their consciousness upon him in deep meditation. O goddesses of Braja, when Krishna is enjoying himself with Balaram on the mountain slopes, playfully wearing a flower garland on the top of his head, he engladdens all with the resonant vibrations of his flute. Thus he delights the entire world. At that time, the nearby cloud, afraid of offending a great personality, thunders very gently in accompaniment. The cloud showers flowers onto his dear friend Krishna and shades him from the sun like an umbrella. O pious Mother Yashoda, your son, who is expert in all the arts of herding cows, has invented many new styles of flute playing. When he takes his flute to his bimber-red lips and sends forth the tones of the harmonic scale in variegated melodies, Brahma, Shiva, Indra, and the other chief demigods become confused upon hearing the sound. Although they are the most learned authorities, they cannot ascertain the essence of that music, and thus they bow down their heads and hearts. As Krishna strolls through Braja with his lotus petal-like feet, marking the ground with the distinctive emblems of flag, thunderbolt, lotus, and elephant gold, he relieves the distress the ground feels from the cow's hooves. As he plays his renowned flute, his body moves with the grace of an elephant. Thus we gopis, who become agitated by Cupid when Krishna playfully glances at us, stand as still as trees, unaware that our hair and garments are slackening. Now Krishna is standing somewhere counting his cows on a string of gems. He wears a garland of tulsi flowers that bear the fragrance of his beloved, and he has thrown his arm over the shoulder of an affectionate cowherd boyfriend. As Krishna plays his flute and sings, the music attracts the black deer's wives, who approach that ocean of transcendental qualities and sit down beside him. Just like us cowherd girls, they have given up all hope for happiness in family life. O sinless Yashoda, your darling child, the son of Maharaj Nanda, has festively enhanced his attire with a jasmine garland, and he is now playing along the Yamuna in the company of the cows and cowherd boys, amusing his dear companions. The gentle breeze honors him with its soothing fragrance of sandalwood, while the various Upadevas, standing on all sides like panegyrists, offer their music, singing, and gifts of tribute. Out of great affection for the cows of Braja, Krishna became the lifter of Govardhan Hill. At the end of the day, having rounded up all his own cows, he plays a song on his flute, while exalted demigods standing along the path worship his lotus feet, and the cowherd boys accompanying him chant his glories. His garland is powdered by the dust raised by the cow's hooves, and his beauty, enhanced by his fatigue, creates an ecstatic festival for everyone's eyes. Eager to fulfill his friend's desires, Krishna is the moon arisen from the womb of Mother Yashoda. As Krishna respectfully greets his well-wishing friends, his eyes roll slightly as if from intoxication. He wears a flower garland, and the beauty of his soft cheeks is accentuated by the brilliance of his golden earrings and the whiteness of his face, which has the color of a butterberry. With his cheerful face resembling the moon, Lord of the Night, the Lord of the Yadus moves with the grace of a regal elephant. Thus he returns in the evening, delivering the cows of Braja from the heat of the day. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, O King, thus during the daytime the women of Vrindavan took pleasure in continuously singing about the pastimes of Krishna, and those ladies' minds and hearts, absorbed in him, were filled with great festivity. Chapter 36, The Slaying of Arishta, the Bull Demon. Shukadev Goswami said, the demon Arishta then came to the cowherd village. Appearing in the form of a bull with a large hump, he made the earth tremble as he tore it apart with his hooves. Arishtasura bellowed very harshly and pawed the ground. With his tail raised and his eyes glaring, he began to tear up the embankments with the tips of his horns, every now and then passing a little stool and urine. My dear king, clouds hovered about sharp-horned Arishtasura's hump, mistaking it for a mountain. And when the cowherd men and ladies caught sight of the demon, they were struck with terror. Indeed, the strident reverberation of his roar so frightened the pregnant cows and women that they lost their fetuses in miscarriages. The domestic animals fled the pasture in fear, O king, and all the inhabitants rushed to Lord Govinda for shelter, crying, "Krishna, Krishna!" When the Supreme Lord saw the cowherd community distraught and fleeing in fear, he calmed them, saying, "Don't be afraid." Then he called out to the bull demon as follows, "You fool! What do you think you're doing, you wicked rascal, frightening the cowherd community and their animals when I am here just to punish corrupt miscreants like you?" Having spoken these words, the infallible Lord Hari slapped his arms with his palms, further angering Arishta with a loud sound. The Lord then casually threw his mighty serpentine arm over the shoulder of a friend and stood facing the demon. Thus provoked, Arishta pawed the ground with one of his hooves and then, with the clouds hovering around his upraised tail, furiously charged Krishna. Pointing the tips of his horns straight ahead and glaring menacingly at Lord Krishna from the corners of his bloodshot eyes, Arishta rushed toward him at full speed, like a thunderbolt hurled by Indra. The Supreme Lord Krishna seized Arishtasura by the horns and threw him back 18 steps, just as an elephant might do when fighting a rival elephant. Thus repulsed by the Supreme Lord, the bull demon got up and, breathing hard and sweating all over his body, again charged him in a mindless rage. As Arishta attacked, Lord Krishna seized him by the horns and knocked him to the ground with his foot. The Lord then thrashed him as if he were a wet cloth, and finally he yanked out one of the demon's horns and struck him with it until he lay prostrate. Vomiting blood and profusely excreting stool and urine, kicking his legs and rolling his eyes about, Arishtasura thus went painfully to the abode of death. The demigods honored Lord Krishna by scattering flowers upon him. Having thus killed the bull demon Arishta, he who was a festival for the gopis' eyes entered the cowherd village with Balaram. After Arishtasura had been killed by Krishna, who acts wonderfully, Narada Muni went to speak to King Kamsa. That powerful sage of godly vision addressed the king as follows. Yashoda's child was actually a daughter, and Krishna is the son of Devaki. Also, Rama is the son of Rohini. Out of fear, Vasudev entrusted Krishna and Balaram to his friend Nanda Maharaj, and it is these two boys who have killed your men. Upon hearing this, the master of the Bhojas became furious and lost control of his senses. He picked up a sharp sword to kill Vasudev. But Narada restrained Kamsa by reminding him that it was the two sons of Vasudev who would cause his death. Kamsa then had Vasudev and his wife shackled in iron chains. After Narada left, King Kamsa summoned Keshi and ordered him, "Go kill Rama and Krishna." The king of the Bhojas next called for his ministers, headed by Mushtika, Chanura, Shala, and Toshala, and also for his elephant keepers. The king addressed them as follows. "My dear heroic Chanura and Mushtika, please hear this. Rama and Krishna, the sons of Anakadundubi, are living in Nanda's cowherd village. It has been predicted that these two boys will be the cause of my death. When they are brought here, kill them on the pretext of engaging them in a wrestling match. Erect a wrestling ring with many surrounding viewing stands, and bring all the residents of the city and the outlying districts to see the open competition. You, elephant keeper, my good man, should position the elephant Kuvalyapida at the entrance of the wrestling arena and have him kill my two enemies.